Jack County though, but basically worked in building trades.
Okay. Well, it seems we're going to have you start, and whenever you're ready.
I am James Black. Today is Monday, April 4th, 2011. I am interviewing Ernie O'Grince from the Cuyahoga Valley Agriculture Project. For the record, sir, would you mind stating your full name and spell it out for the viewers?
My name is Ernest A. O'Grince, Jr. My last name is O-G-R-I-N-C.
All right. When and where were you born?
I was actually born in Cleveland, 1941, July 26.
And you grew up in Jack County, correct?
Basically, right. From when I was 7 years old till about 19, I was in Troy Township of Geauga County and graduated from Burton High School. And I ended up coming into town looking for work and ended up being in the heating, air conditioning work as a union pipe fitter.
Would you mind talking about your childhood? It was on a farm, correct?
Yeah, it was a lot of work, you know. We were so self-contained, basically. We didn't have the freedoms to move around like you do today. So I was the oldest of 10. And we were just basically, we were farmers, and that was our life every day. We worked a lot of long hours, you know. Our break was bad weather.
How long did your family actually have this farm?
Well, my dad bought the place back in 1948, and I can't remember when, after my dad's death and that, then my mother and the last two siblings actually sold and came into town. I can't remember how long that is.
And was this the basis for your desire to become a farmer?
It is in my blood to farm, okay? As a kid, you're taken into the situation because we end up with cattle, hogs, chicken, we ship milk, did a lot of grain and hay farming, so I enjoyed it. If there had been money in farming, but back in the middle 50s already, it was very hard to sustain a good life on a farm. And I remember when we started shipping milk, and milk was at a pretty good rate. President Eisenhower says I'm going to take milk down to $3 a hundredweight from 5-something, and he did. He got it almost to the bottom. That just sort of kills everything and just made things more difficult for most farmers all around the whole nation, actually, in Geauga County especially. And we have some of the better productive lands in the county up there in Geauga, and it's just very hard. Even the Amish today are having a tough time sustaining themselves.
Is there anything in particular that you remember that held true to you, that you kept from your farming styles from childhood to later on? Like special techniques or anything that
you're fantastic? You know, one thing my dad did was he was an organic farmer from back in the 50s. He always subscribed to the Organic Farmer magazine before it became Farming and Gardening. It was actually a booklet thing that came, I don't remember if it was every month or not. And he did things in his own way, which was sort of innovative, like if he was going to put in crops, like let's say after corn, he would just disc, not plow. That was his form of no-till. But then, of course, we rotated crops, so every so often would be in the hay, and then we would plow, because you had to plow because of sod for corn. So as a result, we rotated, but even go from oats to wheat was our rotation. And he would just disc for that and plant. Never believed in plowing, but did not believe in not plowing, of course, either. There were certain times. Didn't have to always turn the soil that deep. Used all our own cow manures or whatever we had, and never really used commercial grade fertilizers. He used natural stuff like phosphate and potash. Was all natural stuff he would get. And of course, your legume crops, if you had clover and alfalfa, provides the nitrogen in the ground, especially for corn. And the rest of your crops don't require as much nitrogen as you do for corn.
Would you mind stating when you began farming in the valley?
I moved into the valley. We 1983 actually moved into the house. We started building in September, actually October of 82, and moved in March of 83. And I actually have two lots, legitimate lots. And the house, excuse me, is on one. And it was about 1.5, 2 acres behind it that I considered as open field of plow or whatever. And then it was like 5.5 acres next to it that was able to be tillable. Excuse me. And is there a way of dropping that out or not? Okay. And as a result, a fellow down the street with the name of Bob Musil, his mom and dad had a pretty good little farm down there and that. I got to befriend him and got a tractor off the farm. Our farm was still going a little bit. And with his help, because he had the farm machinery, went ahead and did about 7 acres of hay. And we started growing hay down there on the open land.
So basically through the cooperation of...
At that time. Then eventually he did leave. He bought a place in Marshallville, Ohio, and left us there with... And I was doing hay next door for the Vonats, who had a horse farm there. And another person came, Marty Johnson's father, who has a farm up on Alexander Road, right there by the canal interchange. Everybody knows him for his crops and vegetables that he basically does. And his father came down and asked, who's doing hay? What are we going to do about hay? Because Bob Musil used to do all the hay for all this, you know, and we all cooperated, worked with him. And I decided that before he came down, I was going to have to get my own machinery. And it was in my blood to fire him as a side thing. And so Bob Musil and I went together. We went to different sales and acquired all the equipment that I needed. And we started making hay, basically. I did do sweet corn for a while, then had difficulty with my health. I had a little bit of a cancer problem. Then I had my left hip replaced. And that got me out of the sweet corn business. But I'd like to go back in it, but the problem there is we got a lot of deer, and I have to refence my whole place to be able to save my crops. Although they do get a good bit of my hay, especially alfalfa, they love that. Now, this is not with the valley, but I farmed this corner of Chaffee and Canal Road. That's my field. And I've had that for quite a few years. Well, right now, another party's got control of it because he homesteaded it through the park system. And it's Dave Wingenfeld. He's also a neighbor down the street. So I still have control of that corner field, but the deer have a picnic in there, and they anywhere 20 to 40 you might count at times. And I seen my second cut when after the first cut's off, because it grows pretty quick, they have a tendency to chop it down pretty well. They probably lose at least 40% by the time they get done. I seen the stuff like 18 inches high. When I went to cut, it was only about 12 because they chopped the tops right off. So that's the experience that is have with deer. But they leave me some, so I'm happy. Anything else I could tell you?
So you retired from the HVAC?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
To go into farming?
Oh, no. Did farming since around 83, 84 after I moved in. Now, I've been always was a farmer for so it was in my blood, so that's why I continued on doing it here as a hobby type thing. Well, they call it labor of love, really. You don't really make good money at it. Just, especially now that I'm retired, gives me a lot to do, and so keeps me going.
So what do you actually farm? Or, like, what are your crops? That you
just basically hay. That's what I was saying. I do basically hay. I did do sweet corn. I'd like to get back into it. And of these recent years now, I've set up a pretty good-sized garden for myself, almost 10,000 square foot. But it's all fenced in with 2x4 welded wire for 4 feet and a couple strands of hot wire to keep the deer out. And even when I did sweet corn, I had 7-strand hot wire and around my couple acres of sweet corn, I was able to keep the deer out. But once you take the power off, they go right through it. So
besides the challenges of the deer, were there any other substantial challenges?
Oh, Mother Nature with the weather. That's a major challenge. You know, I remember going back in the 80s, before it started warming up in 88, we were lucky if we could get 74, 76 degree days, not even with sun, to dry hay. Once hay is getting near the dry point, it gets hit with rain, it just literally ruins it. Most cases not worth anything. sometimes people have to feed it just because there's no alternative, but you lose the nutrients. And besides the color, you lose the food value and everything right out of it. So, yeah, you're dependent on Mother Nature. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of it, but today's the 4th, but I understand, according to the Weather Bureau, the 3rd was 83 degrees last year. And look where we're at this year. So what am I saying? Mother Nature controls it. You don't know what's going to happen. We don't even know if we'll make it because maybe we won't get enough dry weather. It's dependent on clear, dry weather. One of the toughest things to do. And then if you're growing corn for cattle food, of course, in the fall is when you harvest it after it dries on the stalk. And if you got fields that can't handle a lot of water, sometimes people can't even get into harvested because it's just too wet. They have to wait till it freezes, or I've seen them wait till next spring, maybe when it dries out, or lose it. So there's a lot of, in that particular field, I'm talking about on the corner of a Chaffee Canal, that one tends to be sort of called a wet field. It takes a long time for it to dry out.
So could you tell us more about the business part about it, the actual selling of your crop?
I sell basically to about 5 girls on my street that have horses. That's what I basically started selling to. And now, as of recent, I've been putting it on, not eBay, what's the other one? Internet. The other that is you can advertise on. I guess my mind's gone blank right now. Craigslist. You've heard of Craigslist. I've been able to sell on Craigslist, and I have picked up additional customers. And I have made more hay last year than I ever did for myself, which to me was a lot for myself. It was 2,500 bales. And I do have some left over. It sells all good hay. But I really had a good year last year. It grew well. It was a little tricky getting it in, but but there was the weather pattern wasn't too right. No, too bad I was able to get in without getting wet. But that's the whole problem. You got to work between the weather.
So you have been relatively successful. How would you?
Let's put it this way: I've been somewhat successful with it, but you don't make a lot of money. You know, I'm covering my expenses. I'm not getting rich on it. And actually, if I didn't do any of the farming, I would be better off because I actually subsidize what I'm doing. So, but it's more or less so. To be in farming today, it takes such, you have to do such a massive amount of it and big equipment. And I was talking to some person at a recent sale at Whitmer's in Columbiana County. And they said it takes $1 million today to be a farmer if you had to start from scratch. I don't know if it's worth that kind of investment. You might be better off putting in some kind of investment. But, of course, we need food. And food is a major thing. And even us smaller people in our what we do, we're getting, and people are getting more into it locally, is to start growing local foods. And it's much better than getting it from out of the country if you can help it. I myself grow enough food where I freeze it, can it, and I cannot eat everything I have in 1 year that I have canned in. But, you know, things happen. You don't know what the weather's going to do. You got to have extra food around. They're talking more and more about that, you know. Food supply, water supply, and all that. So it's going to be a big thing. So a lot of little people starting to grow food around, learning more about it, hearing about it. They've had people on NPR locally talk about it. And I think Cleveland State might have been a part of that. I'm not sure. But there was some groups talking about it and about doing local gardening and all. Get these little co-ops together or whatever. So there's a future in it as far as you want to keep busy. Will you make a lot of money? No, but it might have to give you a few dollars extra to spend.
Would you mind going a little more in detail with the cooperative aspect of your farming?
I don't do any cooperative stuff with mine. I basically do my own thing, and I work with one other person at this time because he's got the land under his control. Now, with the park system, I did rent extra lanes down on Stone Road there. But that's being homesteaded out. And I told them if the doesn't successful getting homesteaded out, might be interested this year in expanding what I do. But that wouldn't be till later for the fall to put in, like, winter wheat or something. So I'm sort of, I'm a little bit older, gearing up, you might say, to keep going, because that's a goal, you know. You keep myself moving, so don't be too old and decrepit.
So you mainly see yourself as an individual, part of the bigger aspect, rather than having a reliance on others?
Well, my reliance on others is a matter of getting rid of my product. Other than that, you know, we all need somebody. I'm not really working. Well, if I work with the park system, you know, you know, that's cooperative too. You know, I'm doing something for them because, you know, the park system would like to see the original aspects of farming coming back into the valley. They like to see that so people can see what goes on. And a lot of times when I'm bailing up there, you know, people are interested in seeing what's going on. You got activity. I got people that work with me. I have to have someone to help stack the hay in the wagon, even if I use a kicker. Well, you see all that going on and people are not used to it. It's something to watch. You know, not, people from the city don't get to see all that stuff all the time, especially kids. So I've had people stop, ask questions, and also just watch to see what's going on.
So you enjoy it as a pastime, and do you feel like you're...
It is my pastime.
Do you feel like you're bringing back traditional farming?
I never thought of it that way, but yes. When you think about it, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm more traditional farming than modern farming, because modern farming, I think, have lost what real farming is about. The foods we grow today through modern farming, using a highly commercial grades of fertilizer and that, are not the same. You don't have the nutrient value. Then you hear so much about you have to take supplemental vitamins today because our foods don't have it. But if you grow the original traditional way, the manures and wastes all go back in the soil, and you rotate crops properly. With legume crops, to get nitrogen back and whatever. A lot of things you do brings the nutrients back out of the soil. And when you, no matter what you put in that soil, those animals eat it. It goes into them in the form of milk for cattle, beef, the meat, chickens, eggs, everything. And you might have heard that when Japan's problem, that they have this radiation problem with the animals getting radiation that's in the milk. Well, yes, even there's some that can really be bad for a farmer. If you have wild garlic growing in your pasture and the cattle eat it, trust me, the milk smells just like garlic. You cannot put that in with your milk to ship because you got the smell of garlic. And although garlic's good in food, nobody wants it in their milk. As far as in the meat, it doesn't. You don't get that. But and I know that from personal experience, because whatever those cows eat, that goes into that product of milk. So,
do you have any issues with like cross contaminations with your crop? Or
no. Fact is, you've heard a lot of these genetic modified crops. Those are bad. especially if you believe in any kind of organics. And there's such a thing as if they cross-pollinate to an innocent farmer, Monsanto can actually sue the innocent farmer because now they're saying he's stealing their modified crops. And there's something really wrong with that. The USDA's got to get onto that. Somebody's got to. But keep them out of the valley. The valley, you know what? Well, nothing with the national parks and we have to get approved whatever we want to use for herbicides or insecticides and that, which the only thing I can honestly say I've used was Roundup. And now the truth has come out that Roundup is not as innocent as was once thought. And it came actually from Europe where they found out that Roundup was getting into the water supply. It was not binding up with the soil as we were originally told that it would go inert in the hitting soil. It's not true. It comes out. So the best thing is to stay away from herbicides and all, try to do things as organically as we do. Thank God most of us in the valley do gardening now. We do exactly that.
Going back to the National Park Services, do you have a good relationship with them?
Yes, I do. Yeah, because, you know, they got something I want. So I have something that they want, just to be able to work the land, and I would like to have land to work. So you have to have a good working relationship, obviously. And I've worked very much over these past years with Darlene Kelbeck, and she's been a good person to know. We've been friendly, and we have to live with the agreement. You know, the park system does have their rules and regs, and you just have to accept them or don't do it. That's all. So, yeah, I have a good relationship with them.
So you're okay with their, like, regulations?
It's their regulations, yeah. Sometimes you might wish they could loosen up on something, maybe deer control or something like that, because that takes out some of the profit that you're making. It can really hurt you. And there might be a few things in there. It hasn't really affected me, but I've heard others say, and I'm not going to, you know, it'd be nice if they could maybe talk a little bit sometimes on some of these issues that I've heard others say. I have not had them. But what they're trying to do, which I agree with, they're trying to keep the valley farming in the old traditional way, and I am all for that because that's really what it's all about. And we have gotten away from tradition, and I'm not saying it's good. Some cases, not bad. Because had my hip replaced back in 04, and I can get around. But before that was done, I couldn't get out of a chair with two legs. So getting away from tradition, not bad either. Not to get away too far, though. Everything's within reason. So,
if you mind me going back to your actual farm itself, was there any one particular area or place in the valley itself or your farm that really had a... meaning to you, or like a big significance?
In what respect?
Like a certain plot that meant a lot more to you than, say, another area that has like perhaps brought up family memories from your childhood, or?
Well, the farm, my dad took us out to the farm to begin with, so, you know, that was just the way it was, you know. I lived in Cleveland till 7 years on St. Clair Avenue. So, but my dad had the love for farming. That's why he ended up moving out there. And out of 10 brothers and sisters, I only have one sister that loves gardening. And the rest of my family don't have anything to do with farming. But I have this love for farming. It's always been in me. And so once I got retired because of my health conditions or whatever, I was able to keep on, although... While I was still working, I started my farming part. And coming home in the evenings, working in the air conditioning. Yeah, remember, we work long hours in the summertime, so I'm cutting hay, baling, and there was a lot of long hours I put in. But labor of love, I loved every bit of it, you know. But it set me up for what I'm doing today. And as long as I'm alive and healthy can do it, I'm going to keep doing it. I have no desire to go to Florida. This is where they'll carry me out of.
So do you feel like you're carrying on your father's legacy?
I don't know. I never looked at it that way. I think I just carried on myself with what I liked, you know. Although I did a lot of my dad's stuff, was my start. So I suppose you could say I have been doing that, but I never did intentionally or thinking about it that way. It's a tough question there, though. I would rather not have my dad's life was put that way.
Do you have any children of your own?
No, I never had any children. Been divorced for quite a few years, so basically, bashed a long time now. Or single divorced, anyhow.
So, with your land, is there any like specific message that you plan to leave, like to embrace the traditional values?
I'm trying to ask what you think. What you're asking exactly? I don't want to see any more developed than it is in that area. You know, I'd like to see that stuff stay into farming. That's why I'm basically doing what I'm doing and not selling up. Now, you know, it's not too bad if they build a house on the street side, let's say, you know, in the farm, the land behind is being farmed. But to come in, develop a whole area like they do all over, I would not want to see that. That would really take away from the Valley of Valley View. And it's a different thing. You know, you come out of downtown Cleveland, hot, sweaty all day, 9 o'clock at night or something, 20 minutes when there's no traffic on 77. I was in farmland. And it's just two different lives, you know. A little slower, not as fast. And you see the animals. We got the greenery, the fields. And that's what I guess I've helped to keep going. That's why I'd like to see it for others, so. But you can't lose the tradition of what, how we do farming today, or lose that concept, you know. Everything isn't always, let's develop it. That's not really the true answer either.
So you really appreciate what the National Park Services are trying to do?
Oh, yeah, I really do. Yeah. Yeah. If I was a little younger and... Of course, hindsight's always better, but, you know, my career being a HVAC person and for almost about 40 years, and I can't knock it and make good money at it, and there's a good life there, too. But I enjoy what I'm doing. But if I was younger, I might have considered taking on more, especially if my health would have held up. So I'm sort of making up for lost time with that respect. But even after my hip was done 9 weeks later, I jumped in my tractors and did all the machinery work to make hay. And then, so that goes to show you what kind of attitude I had.
So can you think of, like, any one particular story that sums up your farming career?
You know, we have floods down there, too, so some of the land gets flooded. Mine doesn't really get flooded. But we had a tornado come through there about 10 years ago now, and that can tear things up for you a little bit. But in particular, I don't know, it's just been a great place to live. That's all I can tell you. Just, it's been good down there, that's all.
Can you tell us a little more about the process of having a hay farm? What do you have to do every day?
You know, growing hay is not a real big problem because once you prepare the land properly and sow it and with minimal type of care, really, it can last, that hay crop will last a long time. And if it's well taken care of to a point where you don't have to do a lot of fertilization or anything like this, as long as your legume crop stays in or whatever percentage you have, you get your grasses like the Timothy or the orchard grass is very common. It's just a matter of Mother Nature taking over at this time, letting it grow. But we have to go in with some means of cutting it down. Today's process is a combination called a hay bind, disc bind, or maybe new idea had their cut conditioner. What you do is you cut it and crush it to some extent to open up the stems to allow it to cure better, to be able to dry. And you don't really dry hay, you cure it. There's a difference. And then we'll come in with a tedder, and we'll ted the hay up to fluff it to help the air and sun get through. Mother Nature with drying or curing hay, I want to use the word curing, is amazing that this stuff is so wet, so thick when you cut it, and yet it cures up and dries the moisture out of it so quick. It's unbelievable. And then we come by, we have to rake it into what's called a windrow. And generally, I don't like the windrow unless I know I'm going to bale it because if you have to let it go overnight because you didn't get it baled up, now you got moisture underneath. You have to flip it or fluff it or something. So the least you have to handle that hay, the better off you are. The main thing with any kind of hay, and I'll describe the thing about hay, by the way, too, is you want the leaves on it as much as possible. Stems are not necessarily where the nutrients are. And then you come by and you bale it and for whatever size bales you want to be able to handle. Like especially women, girls that have horses, they cannot handle the really big round bales you see. So they need the rectangular type bales. They don't need a big bale that they can't handle. Most of them don't have excessive storage. So when they come to me, they come and they get maybe 20 to 30 bales at a time because that's the only storage. So I'm actually storing hay for them. Now I have a neighbor. I've been storing hay in that barn. I don't have my own barn for 20-some years. And I've also been using last couple of years Marty Johnson's barn up on Alexander because I've been making more hay than what I ever had before. This thing about hay, anything, even weeds, if you cut them down and you cure them and dry them, will be hay. And a lot of people don't understand what hay is. It's any green foliage like that that you can take. So you got weeds, you got all kinds of grasses, you have your timothy, alfalfa, clover, orchard grass, which are the most common. You got broom grass grows in a lot of cases. Some of these things grow on their own almost. They're just there. They just seem to grow. The thing you got to put in is your clovers, alfalfa, and timothies. Now, I've not had good, tried every which way, I've not had good luck with growing timothy in this area. Orchard grass comes by itself. But anything you take to cut down, if you do it young enough, is, and weeds are edible, by the way. Weeds are very, have a lot of nutrients as long as they're harvested when they're young. And dandelions are great salad also for humans. I enjoy dandelion salad myself. Very good in iron, and it's a good spring tonic to help clean your body system out and everything else. So everybody looks at a dandelion as a weed. It really is a vegetable. You're laughing. Did you ever eat it?
No.
Let me just tell you a little bit how you fix it, the way we always do. You take the dandelion, you got to pick and clean it, just like you do lettuce, a little tougher. And then you take potatoes, you boil them up, cut them up, and you put them in there hot. And then you take bacon, you fry the bacon up in bits. With that little bit of oil, you throw that in there. And what am I? Oh, egg. You take hard-boiled eggs, you cut them all up, and you throw that, and you make that as a mixture with your favorite oil and vinegar or salad dressing. Basically an Italian-type dressing. And you eat that really warm. The dandelion is just room temperature, whatever. But your potatoes and your bacon and your eggs can be warm, and you make that. And it's really a great meal.
Can you explain the process of curing or what you mean by that?
If you why do we say cure? You want the hay still to have moisture in it, but it cannot have enough sugars and moisture in it that are not cured, so that if you stack it in the barn, you can cause spontaneous combustion. So it has to be dried enough. I don't like to use the word dry because it's really curing. And the word dry, you can over-dry hay, and it just becomes too dry, and it loses a lot that way too. Well, yeah, we do use the term dry. I like to use the term cure. You want to cure the hay so it's safe to store. And don't forget, you're going, sometimes you can go up to 2 years with hay and it's still good. After that, now you're getting, it's starting to break down. It's not that great. But the more you dry it excessively, the less food value in it. So that's why we say cure the hay, not dry it. You see, here's another thing. When you dry something, it becomes very, where you can just pulverize it. But if you cure it, it's still got moisture, a certain amount of moisture stuff, so it does not just fall apart.
And can you give us a sense of the differences between the types of grass? Or you mentioned timothy. what makes those different?
I can't get that involved in tell you what. All I can say is your timothies, your orchard grass, and your normal grasses, they're a grass. But now let's go to clover. And you know what clover looks like. There's just a little more richness to clover. Not really for horses, but more for cattle. Milking cattle, feed cattle. Alfalfa is a legume crop also, which is very high in nutrients in that. But it can be too rich for most horses. That's why I have only a percentage they can use that, but you cannot feed horses that are pleasure horses just plain alfalfa. It's like giving, I don't know, kids ice cream all the time and no potatoes. That's how I describe it, especially first cut to second cut. There's another thing. We can get 2 to 3 cuts. You go to Worcester, the big farmers, they cut the hay very early, and they put it into what they call a silage, which is actually like a sauerkraut. Cattle love it. Then they get their second, third, and maybe fourth. Down here in the valley, it's very tough for us because we have wet conditions. We don't have the dry conditions. Hard to get that third cut, but we can get second. Second cut, every time you go to another cut, is because the grass grew, but it's finer and more rich. And as a result, it becomes like eating potatoes or versing ice cream. That's why a lot of people don't understand the difference. I say, well, you can't give the horses ice cream all the time, which is the second, third cut. You go to first cut, they won't eat it. And nothing. Well, if you can give them a really good, high quality, but it's too much, too rich, though. Very high in protein in that, too rich. Now, if they're race horses on the track where they're working them all the time, yes, that's what they like to feed them, a good, rich hay. So you can't, even your body will not eat real rich foods. You got to have the real staples in there, too. So basically the same thing. But there is a difference. That's the only way I can describe those differences to you. I don't grow a clover intentionally because for horses, grasses with alfalfa mix is nice. Not a whole lot of alfalfa, but a nice mix in it. Or you can just feed them all grasses. There's nothing wrong with that. And I understand llamas. I've sold some of the people that have llamas. Llamas, I was told, nothing but grasses, orchard grass, timothy, stuff like that. Then I run into somebody very recently, been feeding his 40 llamas second-cut grass. Now, second-cut grass is also very rich, not as rich as if it has alfalfa, but it's a very rich grass, too. So, and his horse, his llamas will not eat first cutting because he spoiled them with second cutting. Now, you don't get as much on second cutting like you do first cutting. It's finer, thinner, doesn't grow as high. Third cutting, generally the same thing. Although this past year, if I'd have had the weather, my third cutting was better than my second cutting, but I had to chop it up and just leave it for manure, which is not bad either, which I did in my fields this year.
So what is your the schedule over a year? Do you plant? Or
what's your question again? I missed the
real... I guess the kind of the schedule for your year.
I do all kinds of things. You got machinery, just kick around, it's just normal living type stuff. But now I'm already starting to spread. I have this horse manure that's been broke down for 5 years. I'm getting that in my garden because I want to get the humus base back in it. And I do haul manure from the girls that make manure with their animals, and I bring it back home and I put it on a pile. It's got to rot for at least a year because sawdust and shavings have to break down naturally. If you put them on a field, to break down, and they take all the nutrients out of the field to do that. And so, but this stuff I have is 5 years old. It's all black and very good to put back on the field. You're putting it back in. And now just getting prepared because, 6 weeks, be time to cut hay again. Doesn't look like it, but, that hay will be up 18 inches, 2 foot, I'll cut it. The weather's there. When the weather's ready, I'll cut it. And then after that, it's still a process. And that keeps me going through the summer or whatever else I'm doing. So it's just, if I was planting sweet corn, I'd have to look about sweet corn. If I was planting oats, I'd have to be looking to plant oats right now. Actually, April is the month to plant oats. If the weather allows you to plow, and fit to get it in, because oats likes cooler weather. And then in May, you start looking to put corn in. And then at the same time, a farmer's rotation is hay. And then in the fall, you're looking at putting in wheat in August or so, September. And then they're starting to take, they're growing corn for cattle feed. They'll start cutting and chopping and putting in silos for ensilage. And then at the same time, you're combining too, you start in July and August, you're combining wheat and your oats and whatever crops of like grain crops you might have. So a farmer's really busy all through that. There's only that little lull area you have in winter, and most farmers, they work on their machinery and this and that to get ready again, you know, and whatever. But you're working long hours, and even me, it keeps me going more. You can imagine I still cut 2.5 acres of grass, you know, every 4 or 5 days when the weather permits, you know, when it's grown so fast and that. So it keeps me busy when I do.
So what is your strategy for, you said working between the weather. How do you plan what your next move is going to be?
Your next move is exactly that. Be ready. You know, when Mother Nature says it's time, gives you a break, you do it. You don't sit there, well, I'm going to wait, because sometimes you wait. I've seen it where you'll get 1 week, and after that it rains for the next month. It doesn't have to be steady. It just doesn't give you 3 days. You get about 2 days, and then the third day when your crop was hay would be ready to bale, it rains on you. And so too many times you see it happen. So when that window's there, you got to go for it. And these big farmers, they have a very tough time doing, say, 10,000 or 100,000 bales of hay in a short window. So sometimes they get stuck, no matter how big they are, how much equipment they have. Everything is on Mother Nature.
Can you tell us what your farm looks like?
Well, it's got a house on it. You know, if you want to really call it a farm, it's a little over 13.5 acres. It's just a couple fields inside and behind the house. I have a sawmill back there that I cut lumber with. And it's just open fields right now with grass. And my stuff goes back to the woods, so we have a hill there with all trees. And I have a tree line alongside my whole property on the left side, would be the west side, because I'm on the north of side of Tinker's Creek. So I got a large lawn area in front and whatever. And I'm actually trying to build a barn, but we're hoping to get it going this year. That's my last major project, so we're working on it. It's not like I have a big farming operation, as I was trying to tell you earlier. Just do a little bit of what I'm doing, and with the help of neighbors, you know, I'm able to store it, you know, because I don't have my own barn.
Is it an old property? Was it something else before you moved in?
The actual property was, I don't know how big it really was. You'd have to go back. But the last, with the barn next door, which had the Century Home, and somebody, Eddie Drobnik and his wife, had two owners before him, and the second one before him was personal friends of ours when I was still married with my wife. And that was the original, about 25 acres. And it got split up by the bank who owned it because they were going to develop it. But Valley View said, no, it's not our code. They kept it farming. They wanted what they call rural residential. And so they split it up. And my wife and I, at the time, we ended up taking the two lots because she was into horses. And she wanted horse property. And she started checking around, and we knew that area from driving. We lived up in Bedford on Button Road, and there was Circle Emerald Stables at the end. She always had this love for horses, and she ended up going down there and got into a horse. So actually, she's the one that got me into what I'm doing today. Although that was an inward, closed dream of mine to find some kind of property close to the city, she made the dream come true, but she didn't remain in the dream.
I know you've only been in the valley a shorter time than some people, but what changes have you seen during your years here?
A lot more houses on my street than when I got like 5 new houses right around my area. That's basically the change as far as the valley is concerned. Where it was more property being used for farming is now smaller plots of land with houses on it. Some people just made it all grass. Some, you know, grow vegetables, or maybe they might have animals on it or something. But basically, the people with animals are places that have been had animals for a long time already, way pre my being there even. But it's just got to grow up a little bit, you know, but not real bad. At least we still do farming, gardening. It still has that, not as much, but still has that real country feeling to it. We see the deer, fox, coyotes, got all them things, woodchucks, you know. But a little change, a little more build up, but not real bad. It's acceptable.
And I know you said you know, farming was in your blood, but can you just be more specific and tell us what do you like most about farming?
It's just being with Mother Nature, watching crops grow, watching. We were in 4-H, so we used to go to Jogga County Fair with, golly, something, we had 20 head of cattle because we did open showing as well as 4-H project showing. And we had to milk cows at home, then run over there and milk the cattle we had and show and bring it all back, cool it down so that it could be picked up to ship out. But it's just, there was a satisfaction about it. I don't know if you ever grow anything or not, a garden or anything. You see stuff grow and you know what? The pleasure is watching people eat good food. Same as with animals. To watch the animals eat your hay, liking it. There's the satisfaction. The satisfaction of watching stuff grow, harvesting it, and something enjoying it, if it be people or animals. And that's the joy. That's part of the joy of it. Doing it, I love getting on the tractor, plowing, fitting, planting. It's all part of it. It's just a way of life. And it's a good way of life. It's too bad it's been so lost. Although in some cases they say it's coming back in smaller amounts. I hear that the smaller family farm in some respects is coming back because the large, big commercial farms, not the same. And today, look at the way things are going. We don't have jobs in this country anymore, and you're not going to see a lot of jobs anymore. Technology took over. People are going to be growing more of their own food, I think. And you're going to be looking for more local stuff. And in that respect, it's good.
Well, do you have any other memories or anything else that you would like to share with us?
Oh, I thought I did pretty good at this right anyhow, but I don't know what else I can really tell you anymore, you know. Any other questions?
I just had one about the winter wheat that you were talking about.
Yeah, wheat is, in winter, you plant in like August or September. And if you're lucky, you could get it in October as long as the weather's right. Wheat has a way as it grows up. And if it gets covered, especially with snow, that's good. And wheat has a thing it calls stooling out. And it actually re-roots and grows. Instead of just one plant, you'll get more plants out of it. You cannot get that with spring wheat. Because spring, in other words, winter, you want to get that wheat up about 3-4 inches or so. And it sort of grows. And when you have snow covers, actually an insulator. So things happen to winter wheat different than spring wheat. It takes a lot more seed for spring wheat, and it's not as hardy either, the way I've always understood it. And I just recently had an article the Farm and Dairy read that I never gave a thought of, but they're having a lot of problem around the Worcester area, I guess. Had a lot of this freezing rain come down, and it damages the wheat, and I'd never known that. And I just picked that up out of the Farm and Dairy, which I subscribe to. And there's a lot of, boy, that's a magazine that's got a lot of good stuff in it. Not only farming, just things in general, you know. And that's what I learned about how bad it is when this ice actually freezes the wheat, when you have these ice storms and water freezes coming down. But snow cover is good, except now if you have a good freeze, a general freeze, and snow comes down, that's okay. But they say it's the freezing rain that actually damages the wheat. I don't know of any other crop right now that I think rye might be another one like that. I'm not sure about rye. But that's another crop you can grow too. Get straw off of it as well as the grain.
Anything else?
I have to keep prying my memory a little bit.
Well, thank you.
I hope I was okay with this. You talking about animals, when I was a young person, we used to slaughter our own animals, you know, especially chicken. Today, I've learned so much of respect for life. I have a very hard time. I could never do that again. And it's like you say, if I don't know what's done, it doesn't bother me. Sort of selfish in a way, you know, like my friends and that, they do hunt deer, bow and arrow. And I do get venison meats from them, which are very healthy. And you can say there's no chemicals almost in that food. In that. But, you know, the idea of killing some stuff sometimes, I just can't do it. Cattle, I thought about raising cattle to sell them. But they can become pets. How do you do this? I just can't do it, so I won't. And horses, you know, I'd let everybody else grow to handle horses. That's, if I get my barn built, I might lease out stalls, but that would be the most of it for me. That's all I wanted to say, but...